on 1116 SEN. Evenings with Finey. For Alan Mance, don't lose your pants. Call 1800 Alan Mance.
Welcome back to the evening program. Jeffrey Poulter in the house. And our special guest this evening is a name that would be, I think most football fans would be familiar with the name, but as a football administrator, I, though, as a Caulfield Bears fan, know far better than that. Sort of a mop-top, cheeky forward pocket rover who was part of the very best of times at Caulfield, and that was only part of his on-field story. I speak of none other than Shane O'Sullivan. Good evening, Shane.
Hi, Finey. How are you?
I'm very well.
You always make me feel good when you talk about the good old Bears days.
Well, it's a good place to start off because...
Absolutely.
Sadly, and unfortunately, the VFL, or what became of the VFA now, is sometimes at odds with itself because there are standalone teams, there are aligned teams, and then there are AFL, for want of a better term, seconds. And the purpose of each team is probably different to that of the other teams. But back when the VFA was at its strongest with two divisions, it was a ferocious Sunday competition, wasn't it?
Oh, it was amazing. It was... Every week you knew you were in for a pretty tough encounter, whoever you played. And, you know, you always sort of loved, I must admit, I used to love going to Port Melbourne and playing down there because you knew you were in for a pretty hard contest amongst all those sort of people, and plus some of the people in the crowd as well.
There was a strange camaraderie between Caulfield and Port Melbourne, even though generally we were a second division team or maybe a struggling team in first division. I think there was one year of finals, but Port were a powerhouse. Nevertheless, the two clubs socialised together at the famous Bear Cave, did they not?
I think it was a very famous place, full stop, the Bear Cave. I think one night, I think I counted 75, you know, in those days, VFL footballers come through the door. So I don't think a lot of, you know, people like Tommy Hafey and all that actually enjoyed the boys going there Sunday nights, but it was certainly a great atmosphere around there, that's for sure.
Jeff Poulter, Shane, how are you, sir?
Jeffrey, good, thanks, mate.
I think someone actually, a prominent league footballer was injured one night at the Bears
Cave.
They were playing whatever they do when one bloke sits on another bloke's shoulder and fights another bloke who's on another bloke's shoulder. like hit the floor and got concussion.
I think it was up there, Gazali or something like that, really. Yeah. Ronnie Weemouth. So I think he missed the next three or four games. And as I said, Tommy, when he was coaching Collingwood, wasn't too happy about it, that's for sure.
Right.
I mean, one of the big problems in the area for local pubs, and there was the London Tavern and a few pubs in the area, Sarakowski's down in corner Union Street and Napoleon Highway, was there was no Sunday night business because everybody went to the Bear Cave, and any attempts to have it closed down were pretty futile, given that amongst the jockeys and the footballers and the glamours and the hangers-on, of which... I, as an 18-year-old, became one. There were also plenty of coppers in there. So,
oh, absolutely. There was, everyone.
You were never going to get a prosecution because that's where members of the Elston Wickham Police, Caulfield Police Stations used to go when they knocked off on a Sunday.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people might have been parked in the middle of the road at North Road thinking they were pulled over the side having a sleep.
And you remember when Trotty was coach, he accused the players of socialising too much. One of the reasons we're not winning.
No, they were good times, and it was damn good footy too at the time as well. So, you know, it was a good time to be a part of.
That now I recall that was certainly the best of Caulfield teams, and they were strong. Yep. VFA sides were strong. Now, what brought you to Caulfield? And just give us a little bit of your football, your football journey and your sporting journey, because between yourself and your brother, and I've spoken to Gary on a number of occasions, you covered plenty of clubs and plenty of sports. So where did you go to school?
Went to school at the Morris Brothers in Warrigal, and I can remember we had to play for school in the under 14s on a Saturday competition, and we played the Druin High School with 14 men one day, and we absolutely brained them. And we played them in a grand final. We had everyone playing, and we lost the grand final, would you believe? And then the next Sunday, Bunyip I played for in the under 16s, and we hadn't lost a game all year and lost the grand final, so it was a bad 2 weeks, that's for sure.
Well, speaking of Druin, there's a bit of a Druin connection. I think it might be a Druin connection to Caulfield, and that was, and this is a true story, Louis Milner was Caulfield's high-flying, surfy-looking full forward, and he'd come from Hawthorn, and I remember one day standing at the northern end or the hill end or the barbecue end of the ground. It sounds like it had an end. It was only about 10 metres between the goalpost and the back fence.
Yeah.
But not irregularly, a couple of people would come to the game. And it would be Michael Tuck and a mate of his. And I remember turning around to one of the blokes on the barbecue and saying, "Who's the guy with Michael Tuck?" And he goes, some no-haper from Hawthorn's seconds. It was Gary Ablett.
Gary Ablett. Well, in that under-14 team that I played with, against with Drew and Hyde, Peter Knights played in that. And in our team, we had Leon Rice, who was, you know, a great Hawthorn premiership player who played on the wing. And Leon's probably one of the best, you know, junior players I've ever seen play, you know, junior footy. He was playing centre forward for Drew when he was about 14 or 15. So... you know, that whole area was pretty good to Hawthorn in those days, you know, with the Abbotts and Tucky and these sort of guys. So it's been pretty good to them.
And then where did you gravitate to after that?
Well, you're talking about poor brother Gaz. We played at Bunyip in senior footy there, and Gaz was the second rover to me, but he didn't get on the ball too often, I can tell you that. So... But I ended up going to Canberra and playing up there for a few years and, played at Jez's old club at Eastlake and were lucky enough to win a premiership and then went and played at Cooperoo in Queensland for a few years. And then through Paddy Ganane, I ended up playing at Caulfield, which was, you know, really fantastic. And then had an opportunity to train with the Tigers for a couple of years and sort of where I met Mick, actually. And, he and Barmy were just sort of outstanding to... You know, all the players that weren't actually, you know, listed players and, you know, we were there to train and try our luck and that they were just fantastic to all the people, all the young guys at the time. So it's funny how things turn around.
So in the 70s, when you came into Inside Football Office a couple of times, working with Kevin Sheedy, who were you playing with at that stage?
I was playing at Caulfield.
Yeah,
I got to meet Kevin through Graham Richmond and an uncle of mine, Bill Drake, who worked for Graham. And you know, Kevin's one of these guys, as we all know, you know, he gets you to come along to something, you end up sort of, you know, you get you involved. And gosh, at times I was running footy clinics and things I'd never done before. But I suppose it was just sort of, the early days of preparing myself for getting involved in footy. And, I sort of owe a lot to Kev, to be honest, getting me involved and also giving me a good leg up. Alan Swab, you know, sort of was a great sort of supporter as well who recommended me to Carlton at the time. So, you know, I was pretty lucky to have those sort of people behind me.
Before you came back and played with Caulfield in the VFA, playing in the ACT in Queensland, which were obviously non-traditional football regions.
Yeah.
First of all, what was the uptake like? We always had the notion here in Victoria that Canberra was up for grabs, that there was a possibility that, you know, all three codes, actually, rugby league and football could vie, Aussie rules footy could vie for the hearts and minds. But back in the day, Queensland was considered an absolute backwater. So how did they compare?
Look, I've got to say, in Canberra, when we played finals and particularly grand finals at Manuka, you know, we had crowds of 10,000 to 12,000 people. So... you know, they were amazing, really. There was a good sort of following of our game. And I remember one day I was lucky enough to play for the ACT against Collingwood. And, you know, I've got to be honest, I was a mad Collingwood supporter in those days. And, you know, to play against Liam Thompson and George Bissett and these sort of guys, it was incredible. But, you know, I think the crowd was up around the 14 or 15 at Manuka. So there was a good sort of base. And then in Queensland, it was really... local footy was really strong and, I was lucky enough to represent them. We played Tassie at the Gabba and there were 16,500 people, you know, back in those days. So, you know, a lot of Victorians, a lot of Tasmanians and South Australians sort of all in Queensland. So there was always a good base there. And, you know, when I went up to work, I always knew that, you know, if we could get the team up and going, that, you know, you're sort of going to get some good following in, you know, if we could be a sort of successful team.
Having played, and it came in the last answer, but having played state football, representative football for Canberra and Queensland, you had, I guess, a first-hand taste of what state football was like. It was before State of Origin, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But, you know...
But it meant a lot, didn't it?
Oh, gosh. And look, I was, you know, I was lucky enough to represent the VFA and as well. And I remember Alan Swab saying it doesn't count, but it certainly counted to me. But, yep. You know, we played against South Australia at Footy Park and, you know, the game we played against and there was... You know, people like Mark Williams and Rick Davies and Graham Corns and, you know, some of the, you know, Mark Norsworthy and, you know, some of the biggest names in South Australia at the time. So, you know, we only just got beaten at the end. But, you know, that was an amazing sort of experience. So, but, you know, all those times, any chance you had to represent your state or territory was just incredible at the time.
From those early days when you started to get involved in administration in the 70s, Shane, is there anybody else that's around in administration from those days, still around in any other club, anywhere?
Not really, not from when I first started, just, you know, trying to have a, you know, now you ask me, but, you know, the Greg Millers and Noel Judkins, you know, some great, John Beveridge was, I think, involved with the St Kilda under-19s at the time before he got involved in recruiting. Yeah. But there's, I think there's, just quickly trying to think, there's not too many, that's for sure.
No. So that transition, well, we'll go through to the end of your time in football. So being an unabashed fan... Now, I've got this image. This might be completely wrong. But what number... I was going to guess what number you wore.
At Caulfield? Or?
Yeah, at Caulfield.
Yeah.
Did you wear a high number at Caulfield?
No.
Okay.
I must admit, I get horrified sometimes when I think of how I was when I was younger. You know, I think I wore white boots one day at Port Melbourne. I still can't believe I overdid that. So it must have been a lot of layering at the time. But no, I was number one. Had the number one Guernsey at Caulfield.
No, because I was getting, I was arriving there in a circuitous manner. Now I thought, in my mind, I thought that I had discovered this great little rover, this gold snake. And next season he turns up number one, and everybody knows him, and I thought that I knew you before then, but obviously I was imagining it. That being notwithstanding, your time at Caulfield, you were playing very good. Look, I'll describe you and you tell me whether I'm right or wrong. You're a rover and you had a fantastic goal sense. Now, the way VFA football worked was it was in probably equal parts extremely dangerous and extremely open and free-flowing.
Yeah.
And you were part of both, because as a rover, there were some really, you know, nasty crushes in the middle of the old Princes Park and various other grounds. But we only had a couple of players. In fact, another Queenslander, a guy called, I think, Stephen Russ.
Yep. Steve Russ was there.
Yeah, who were good sort of outside players. We've set you apart from most other players. Is that how you aim to play the game?
And look, I suppose I was pretty lucky at Caulfield, and you'd remember Johnny Einsendel. Well, gosh,
he was my postman.
If anyone anyone did anything to you, you just knew Johnny was there to sort of support you. And, you know, I remember one day he was yelling out, "Who got you? Who got you?" You know, and because he wanted to square the ledger. But, you know, Mick Maguire and Graham Cliff and, you know, there were some amazing sort of, you know, names back in those days in the, you know, for Caulfield who were, you know, Tony Jewell had sort of set up, you know, before I got there and that sort of thing. So, but look, you know, you put your head down in those days and you just knew that it's, you know, some games you were going to sort of get it knocked off. So you were sort of prepared for it. But, you know, it was, 16 aside, it was, had a bit of everything, didn't it? You know, like, you know, it was tight and tough and then open and, you know, some of the skill of some of the players like Gary Davis and at the time, was amazing. Any time he got the ball, I was certainly trying to be running past, I tell you, because he just had amazing sort of handball skills. So, it was a really enjoyable time. And, the two divisions at the time, it really made everyone work hard to try to stay up in Division One.
Who were some of the... There were some famous hard men who were playing VFA football at that time. Trevor Price from Coburg. There was a chap called Thompson who played for Dandenong, I think. He was a barrel-chested bastard. Bones Nolan from Brunswick.
Yeah. There was a bloke at Preston that was tough.
Martin.
Half-forward type, yeah.
And
another one at Paran too. Big, burly
And also Biff McDermott at Port Melbourne.
McDermott.
It's funny because my son plays at Port Melbourne now, and I just can't believe I actually followed Port Melbourne. And because when you played against him, boy, you're in for a big day. And, George Allen and the Goss brothers, God, it was just incredible. If you could play well at Port Melbourne, you sort of, in those days, sort of felt you were getting somewhere. So, every club had some, big names, that could sort of handle themselves and, as well as they were really good footballers as well.
And there's a famous story of Tony Jewell imploring Lou Milner not to engage Bobby Prophet. He said to him, "Look, if you get in his face, if you say anything to him, he goes off. He goes, otherwise, you know, we can avoid Bobby Prophet, the fullback for Port Melbourne, running amok."
Yeah.
And apparently, just before quarter time, there was this all-in brawl, and Tony Jewell fronted Lou and he said, "I told you not to get the bloke riled. What did you say to him?" He said nothing. I spat in the back of his head.
Well, I tell you what, he can handle himself, Louie. Yeah. So, I don't think anyone was too worried what might happen to him. He could certainly look after himself. But, these days, some of those players be rubbed out for 12 months, what they got or what they did sort of thing. So, it sort of brought people, VFA footy was, not only supported well crowd-wise, but, as I was growing up, you couldn't wait for Sunday footy to come on and watch Dandenong play and Frosty Miller and these sort of guys. So it was Paddy Flaherty's, and, it was pretty exciting stuff.
We all enjoyed VFA football in those times, didn't we? And it was a terrible shame what happened, really. How much of it do you think was attributed to the VFL moving in on Sunday footy? Was that wholly or partly, or what percentage do you reckon the downfall of the VFA was due to that, Shane?
Oh, I think it was, as much as we all love our footy and that, it had a big role to play. I mean, I thought, it was sort of a great situation back in those days where you played VFL Saturday and then you had the VFA Sunday. But, I suppose as time goes and you've got to grow the game, even I can remember way back when I was general manager at Footscray, Jack Hamilton rang me and said, "Look, we'd like to play Footscray and Collingwood on a Sunday." Well, I had to go and ask permission to the players, would they be prepared to play? And, Jack guaranteed me, you'd get a crowd of 45,000 to 55,000 those days. And, I must admit, as soon as I spoke to the players, they said, "Let's get there." Footscray boys didn't get the opportunity to sort of showcase themselves in a big game, and I think we had 60,000-odd, and the club did well financially. So I suppose the game had to keep growing at the highest level, so it was always going to encroach, unfortunately, on the VFA at the time.
So, a successful stint in three states, a crack with Richmond. Tell us how Shane O'Sullivan transitioned from on field to your first off-field position.
Well, as I say, I think I was just lucky to, know some good people in Alan Swab and a chap called Max Scales, who was involved with us at Coorparoo in Queensland, come back and took Alan's job as the general manager when Alan went to the VFL in those days. And there was a job at Carlton, and he said, "Look," rang me and said, "Look, there's a really good job going at Carlton. That's sort of you." So I didn't think I'd have any chance, and I went for it, missed out, and then Greg Kennedy, you'd remember, you know, grateful forward for Carlton from the country, and he got the job, and 6 months later he resigned, and they rang to see if I was still interested and when could I start, and I said I'll be there tomorrow. So I was really lucky, you know, to get involved, and you know, just thankful for so many good people, you know, like Max and Scales and Alan Swab and Kevin Sheedy at the time, to sort of helped me sort of, get into that sort of role. And they, you know, Keith McKenzie, who was my first boss, was just amazing. You know, like, I can remember be sitting in my office and Keith had, you know, in those days you had an intercom and you'd buzz and say, come in here, Shano, I've got an idea for training. He was the general manager. He wasn't a coach, but he had ideas for training. And it was just a real thrilling time. And Jezza was the coach. It was... you know, I couldn't believe my luck just to be sort of working amongst those sort of people that, you know, when I started in 1979.
So it's 1979. And what position do you hold, Dan? Because not only has Shane O'Sullivan been involved as a football administrator for, well, heading into...
40 years.
40 years. I didn't want to say it, but the math...
A long time.
The math is thereabouts.
Yeah.
But it also is a transitional period because in the early 70s and before then, there really weren't positions outside of the committee, secretary. The coach.
That's right.
The boot studder,
yeah.
the property steward, and the men with the liniment. I mean, there were the notion of an office at a football ground being manned by somebody on a daily basis and being paid to fill that position was alien to some clubs, and some clubs were slow on the uptake. So what position did you hold at Carlton? And is it fair to say that not every club at that stage would have had a person in a similar role?
Oh, absolutely. Like my job, my title in those days was promotions officer, and we had a general manager in Keith McKenzie, a footy, and a secretary called David Allen, and a lady called Anne McLeod and myself, and that was it.
Yeah, wow.
So I was, you know, very lucky, and I suppose, you know, because of those days, you know, and you played Saturday, like I was sort of in charge of, you know, making sure the odd time we did clinics in those days and promotions that the players had to do, but you're also in charge of the recruiting, you know, and, you know, getting players to come down on permits. So, you know, the trips to Bendigo and the early hours of the morning and things like that to get a signature to be back Thursday to get the paperwork in. And, you know, it was just a great time to be involved and gave you a great grounding where you sort of were right across so many things in footy. And, you know, people like Wes Loss was, just can't speak more highly of him. You know, just was one of those chaps on the board that sort of, and chairman of the selectors that, just gave me every scope to just keep sort of growing and sort of doing things the way, you know, if I wanted to try something, you know, he let you do it. So, you know, you can be lucky where you go and people supportive. So, so there wasn't too many other people at clubs. So it was an amazing time to start.
We need to take a break, Shane, but this fascinating journey and what is it has evolved into, and in no small part because of Shane O'Sullivan, will be explored when we return.
On 1116 SEN, evenings with Finey. For Alan Mance, don't lose your pants, call 1-800-ALAN-MANCE.
Our special guest tonight is Shane O'Sullivan, and we could spend hours talking to Shane, and unfortunately we've only got minutes left. Might have to reconvene. Shane, that time at Carlton with a job that obviously didn't have a description other than everything, had led you to some interesting places, none more so than a fledgling club with unusual colours by the name of the Brisbane Bears.
Yeah. Well, it had no name pretty well when I first started there. But, it was an amazing sort of time, with Christopher Scaife and Paul Cronin. It was amazing to sort of have probably 50 or 60 people jump on a flight early January in 1987 and land in Brisbane and stay at a hotel and get things going. Yeah, it was an incredible time.
There was obviously real difficulties there. I went and watched a game of Carrara in the aluminium temporary stand.
Yeah.
And there was certainly a sense of this club folds up and, or this football ground folds up and might not, might be something very different during summer. But what there was a sense of us against them, and got to give the boys and Peter Knight's credit. They performed admirably, didn't they?
Oh, look, Peter Knight doesn't get the credit enough that he deserves, you know, really. You know, people forget we actually won 6 games in our first year, 7 in the second and 8 in the third. And, you know, like GWS and the Gold Coast, with all the, you know, financial backing and everything that they've had, you know, weren't able to achieve that really in those first few years. And, you know, with what we were given, you know, Peter and the players, you know, Phil Walsh was our first best and fairest winner, who now is the coach of the Crows, and Rodney Eade, and you know, people like that, Ken Judge, you know, just incredible effort by everybody. And it was just, yeah, look, it was tough. And you know, I got to say, deep down, they certainly weren't prepared enough for you know, a team coming up there. As far as in those days, you know, it wasn't a full time, people still work, so all those things hadn't really been sort of sought through enough. But look, we got through. And as I say, those first 3 years, you know, really, people forget how successful or how many games we actually won at the time.
One of the probably miscalculations and bad decisions made by the club was to lure Warwick Capper north. And he spent a couple of seasons with the Brisbane Bears,
yep,
during which time not all the players took to him. And he's fairly convinced to this day, and probably might be correct, that there was a sense on the field of, why should I pass to you, mate? You're getting more money than the rest of us. And even on field, they tended to ignore him.
Yeah, look, I can see what people, you know, Warwick might think that. But, and look, unfortunately, you know, I hate saying it, but we fought pretty hard not to sort of get Warwick, because, you know, Peter Knights and Jimmy Sewell and Mark McClure, you know, Norm Dare and those people who are on the match committee, you know, sort of fought strongly that, saying that, you know, unfortunately, Carrara is such a big, big ground, it's just not going to suit him. But, you know, the powers to be wouldn't listen and you know, want any more for the exposure, you know, which he did give and generate a lot of interest. But, you know, Warwick was a damn good player at Sydney, at the Sydney Cricket Ground, because, you know, one, you know, kick out from Healy and these sort of guys, and, you know, he could jump on top of shoulders. But it was nearly 2 kicks out of the ground at Carrara to get to the goal square, and it just didn't suit Warwick. But I don't really sort of agree that, you know, the players perhaps didn't look for him. It just, he wasn't one of these guys that loved leading. He liked the ball kicked up and top of his head. But, yeah, he certainly had dragged people into the game and did sort of expose the club to a lot of publicity at the time. But as I say, we were keen to give people like John Fidge and some of these guys, you know, more of a chance to play in those positions. But, you know, sometimes the people that got the money at the time, you know, control things.
And after that promising start that you mentioned, 6, 7, 8,
yeah,
it fell away, and it was a bit of a sort of a stigma about the, you know, the bad news Bears.
Yeah.
And I remember Bernie Harris actually got, he got picked up by another club,
St Kilda,
and he said he was most surprised. He said, "You don't expect to get picked up when you get the flick from the Bears." I always remember that.
Oh, look, you're right. I mean, yeah, unfortunately, you know, it's an amazing, you know, when we were struggling there, you know, I think it was the fourth year, we lost the first 6 or 7 games, and we got called to Christopher Scaife's office and got told we had to, you know, sack 6 players because we lost 6 games. Well, boy, you know, when sort of footy people are, you know, around each other, that's just not going to work, and you just can't pick another 6 up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was pretty sort of tough times for Pete to sort of, you know, get through. But, you know, the wheels just sort of fell off as far as perhaps, you know, a little bit of interference from outside the footy world that we couldn't control. And unfortunately, we had Andrew Jarman and Chris McDermott signed up at the time. And Chris did his knee on an overseas trip and, you know, didn't play for 12 months. And Andrew Jarman was ready to sign. He just wanted a guarantee from Christopher Skase, and then day or so later, Christopher business folded. So, you know, we're a bit unlucky in some areas as well.
We need to fast forward because it would be remiss of us not to mention after 25 years service in split stints with Carlton, general manager at Footscray, Brisbane Bears, even a time at North when I think you were coaching Oakley, that you were recognised last year with the highest award for service in the game off-field, and that is the Jack Titus Award given by the AFL. And apparently at the time you thought it was some sort of prank, but that would be, they reckon, typical of Shane O'Sullivan not to think that it was anything but serious. But it was bloody serious, Shane.
Well deserved, Shane.
It was. Look, I'm so proud to have been given this award because, growing up and some of the names that are involved and that have got their name on that award and, you just looked up to, and also to have my name alongside Wes Loss, who I just sort of, couldn't say enough about how much I admire him. And to be sort of in that company, it's sort of hard to explain how, proud I am. And also pleased for my family because, my wife and the kids I think when I was recruiting at Carlton, they never knew really where I was because I was just gone every weekend and, they've been a great support. So it's also, good for those sort of, to sort of share and that sort of thing. But, when I got the letter from Gil and I realised it was about me, I was just over the moon. So, very, very, very lucky and feel very privileged.
Shane, I'm going to leave our listeners with a quote. When you received this award, a number of people spoke up and of their relationship with you. But have a listen to this, people. Not Shane, he'll know who it is. In the current era, Shane's passion for success stands out. There's no job too small, no ego and no nonsense. If he was involved at a local footy club, he'd be the guy chopping up the oranges and making sure the drinks were filled, whilst also chasing down sponsors to make sure the club kept afloat. And they were wonderfully chosen words by one Chris Judd.
Yeah.
Who you have known since he was 16 years old and went on a tour to Ireland.
Absolutely.
As one of the men who took those boys away. Shane, whether it's...
Well deserved. Yeah.
Whether it's Parco or Mick Malthouse or Chris Judd or any of the other people you've been involved with, you've almost moulded the off-field position of football manager, general manager and footy ops manager into what it is today because of the work you've done. So it's been a privilege talking to you. I indulge myself with probably too much Caulfield talk, but you know what? It's not bad talking about on-field and off-field. You've been an absolute superstar. So thanks so much.
Oh, look, thanks, Finey, and thanks, Pulse. I really appreciate it. And, you're a bit biased, I think, Finey, but I really appreciate it.
Oh, Carlton's not my first...
Carlton's not I my know, fir- I listen to you.
Carlton's not my first love, but I try and balance it out with some rational talk. In fact, I think I'm the only person who picked them to finish eighth this year.
Oh, well...
And I told Johnny Barker on air, and he said, gee, getting me excited. And I thought I would have hoped you're excited before.
Absolutely. No, thanks for that.
And next time you see Gary, thank him because he's always available for a chat. And I've lent on his time and his knowledge as well. So between the two of you, the O'Sullivans, you're a damn good thing for football. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Finey. Thanks, Paul.